You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 102.7 FM.
Last month, Co-op Radio made an application to the governing body for radio and television in Canada, the CRTC, to exchange frequencies with a radio station operated by the Jim Pattison Broadcast Group. If the application is approved, Co-op Radio will start broadcasting at 100.5 FM later this year. The application states that Co-op Radio will receive technical, financial, and marketing support from the Jim Pattison Broadcast Group over a period of 5 years, with a total value of almost $1.5 million. We spoke in December with Mark Lindy, former chair of the Co-op Radio Board of Directors, who was centrally involved in the negotiations with the Pattison Group. We wanted to give you a chance to ask questions and make comments on the frequency swap. So we've invited Leela Chinia and Robin Puga down to the studio to help us understand what's involved and to respond to your calls. Leela Chinia is Co-op Radio Program Coordinator, and Robin Puga is on the Board of Directors. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Now, I want to go over some of the basics with you, first of all, and then we're going to open up our phone lines to our listeners. And I guess the first question is, why the Pattison Group is prepared to pay that much money for this frequency swap? What are they getting in exchange?
Well, I guess to explain it, you have to start by talking about frequency and FM, the FM frequency. So there's a finite amount of FM frequency in any area, and that's full. So people talk about spectrum scarcity. They're talking about the fact that the frequency is full of radio stations all over the place. And right now it's really hard to get a full power station slotted into the little tiny gaps that that are available inside of between all the other radio stations. So 100.5, the peak, does have a small slice of that frequency. 102.7 FM, Co-op Radio, has been around since 1975. We've got a big chunk.
Because it was a lot more available in 1975.
Exactly, yeah. So we aren't broadcasting at the maximum capacity we can be. Sorry. essentially, if we swap frequencies, the Pattison Group is able to broadcast up to that maximum amount that we were allowed to at our 102.7 FM.
So we're currently broadcasting at 5,000 watts. How much are we actually licensed to broadcast?
100,000 watts.
100,000 watts. Wow.
So it's a big difference. At 100.5 FM, they're broadcasting at 7,000 watts. I think it's 7,000 watts. So yeah, it's a big difference. There's also if they broadcast at 100,000 watts, they'll get a lot more coverage, a lot more of an audience, and that translates to advertising revenue dollars for them. So that's what they're getting.
So they're getting to talk to a lot more people and sell them more advertising and thus make a lot more money.
Yeah.
So why have we not been able to use this extra bandwidth, I guess, that we have?
Well, you mentioned actually that we broadcast at 5,500 watts. In fact, that's what our transmitter is capable of broadcasting up to. We've never broadcast even that much. We broadcast around, I think, 3,000, something over 3,000 watts. And it's money. We're a small community radio station. It costs money to pump hydro into that machine, into that transmitter, to broadcast. So it's just a matter of money and our transmitter capability as well. But we've just never had the operating expense ability to use that to its full capacity.
So what would happen to that bandwidth if we had not negotiated this deal with the Jim Pattison Group? What would happen to that?
So there used to be something called domestic protection, where if there was some unused frequency, then you still get it protected. So up until now, as you were saying, in 1975, we got this big chunk of frequency that was, you know, protected, allocated is what they call it, up into 100,000 watts. And that's not the case anymore. So now there are stations from Seattle, in fact. This is just how badly radio stations want frequency is there are stations from Seattle trying to squeeze in even in these little gaps, so both Vancouver and Seattle, and it's not protected anymore. So basically, really, right now, with the broadcast, with the frequency spectrum, you don't use it, you lose it. So anything you're not using is not protected anymore. You're protected for what you're using, but anything that you're not using will not be protected. So in our case, if we were to stay at 102.7 FM and use the 3000, even if we were able to use the 5500 watts, we'd be protected for that. The CRTC would protect us. But anything over that, all of that, whatever the math is, the tens of thousands of watts, would not be protected. And any radio station could come in and use that. And if it was an American company, they could use that and it wouldn't be protected for a Canadian company. So so in effect, the more we stay here and not use it, the more that frequency is being, the capability is being lost. At 100.5, there's less that's actually allocated there because it's a smaller chunk, as Robin was saying. So if we move there, we use the same amount that we're using now. We're probably never going to have the operating ability to operate at 100,000 watts. It's just not realistic for us. And so that would work for us. It would be the same thing for us, in effect. We don't change. What does change is that frequency that wasn't being used gets used.
So we've just been sitting on a pile of, you know, like to use, I guess, the corporate language, we've been sitting on a pile of real estate that we couldn't use.
That's exactly it.
Okay.
And the real estate is going to be used. There's no protection for the real estate anymore, so it's got to be used.
Yeah, that's the time-sensitive nature of it as well. If we don't use it, as Leela's saying, we lose it. And the American stations, as soon as they get up to up to their wattage to be able to cover and get into our space, essentially, we can't go into their space because then we end up with distortion of our signal and a whole bunch of other issues. The quicker that space can be used in Canada means that it stays Canadian stations rather than U.S. stations as well.
Now, excuse me, on the other side of the equation, I mentioned a big number, almost $1.5 million. What does that consist of for Co-op Radio?
Well, there's two big pieces, three big pieces. The one is some financial support. That would be $125,000 per year for 5 years. So that's just straight cash we can do with what we would like. And I believe it's coming in monthly installments. So that's going to really help us out a lot. We are not in a very strong financial situation, so that's quite welcome. As well, there'll be some advertising, so that would be billboards, bus stop ads, stuff like that. And that, in total of 5 years, comes up to approximately a cash value of $300,000. So that's $100,000 for the first year, and then $50,000 for the next four subsequent years.
And we have control over what that advertising will say?
Yeah. We have
responsibility for it, actually. Nobody's making it for us, so.
And then the last piece is some equipment. So replacing our station to transmitter link, the STL. Ours is very old. My understanding is that some parts of it actually use vacuum tubes still. And if people are technical, they may remember that vacuum tubes are like from ancient computers before the transistors and stuff like that. So it's going to be really nice to have the security of having that newer equipment and backup equipment. So if we do have a problem with our STL, we do have a backup, which we currently don't have as well.
How did the deal come about?
Well, this was actually, there's a broadcast technician who, there's really only one mountain in the entire Vancouver area where all of the radio stations broadcast from. And so our broadcast technician...
And that's Seymour, is it?
That's Mount Seymour, okay. Exactly. So it's broken up, and we might get into this later as the questions come about, but it's broken up into different parcels of land where you can broadcast from. But it was our broadcast technician who actually brought it up because he was familiar with the fact that Pattison was looking to increase, and I think it was mentioned, they're kind of late coming into the media game, so you know, a lot of these other commercial stations were able to get that real estate like we were a long time ago, and this is kind of what they get out of it. They were late to come in. So they he was aware that they wanted more power. They wanted to be able to be more competitive. He was aware that we were struggling. He knew that we were having issues with our current, where we were leasing our transmitter space from, and that was becoming untenable. And obviously was aware of the condition of our transmitter, which is older than the station, and has been working hard, you know, really giving us a lot in terms of his time and extras in terms of keeping it bound together with whatever it is they have to keep it together.
Duct tape and gum.
And so he kind of was really, I think, the only person to be able to see these two pieces, and I think brought that up and brought that to the attention of both of us. And then Pattison then kind of started negotiations with us.
But the person is not involved with the Pattison station in any way?
Well, he's also a broadcast technician for them, broadcast technician for us. There's really, I think, only one company that does it. It's a very small market, and so saw that need, and then it became between the two parties.
I'm just going to open up the phone lines at this point to let you know, if you're listening and you would have a question about this, or if you have any comments about this, you are very welcome to talk to our guests, Leela Chinia, who's program coordinator, and Robin Puga, who's from the board of directors who negotiated this agreement with the Jim Pattison Group. So the number to call is 684-7561. And please give us a call if you would like to talk to either of these people, or if just you'd like to pose a question, make a comment, then we're opening up our phone lines, and we're going to be continuing. I'm going to be continuing talking to Leela and Robin for a while longer yet. So give us a call at 684-7561 if you would like to be part of the conversation. Now, I want to ask you a little bit more about the transmitter. How long do transmitters usually last? I mean, you say it's older than the station, but I'm just kind of wondering. You're both making faces. You don't really know.
I don't know. I know ours, like Robin was saying, it was on its last legs, and it's old technology, so it's actually using, is it not solid state or solid state? I don't know.
This is stuff that's outside of my understanding realm, but my understanding is that our transmitter and our station to transmitter link has been operating, like Leela said, since the birth of the station. It's been moved around a bit. I think that we you know, we've changed towers in the past, and the technician who has been assisting us, Dan Roach is his name, he has been, every time other transmitters go down at commercial stations, he's been actually able to, when they get replaced, he's using some of their parts to keep ours running. I actually don't know a lot about the technology behind the transmitter.
But we have it on his very good authority that it's not going to last that much longer. And then, of course, I guess the issue of every other radio station probably has a backup transmitter if that transmitter goes down, yes?
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think it's something we've known for a long time. It's sort of been common knowledge that our transmitter's aging. It's something we need to deal with. And it's sort of been so a little bit daunting, you know, because we've got our day-to-day challenges, and that consistently comes up. And as I said, we had these issues come up with our transmitter site rental, so not just the transmitter that we own. So there's all these challenges that come in day-to-day, but we've known for a long time. And I should explain, there's our transmitter, but there's also our STL. And just to explain to listeners, our transmitter is the actual piece of equipment up on Mount Seymour that sends the signal. So there's tons of electricity that gets pumped through there, and that's what allows you to hear the signal from your radio. Now, the STL is a small piece of equipment. It's like a little mini transmitter, and that's what sends the signal from the roof of our station right here to the transmitter. Those are both very, very important. They're integral parts to the system.
Of the chain, yeah.
Yeah, and so we've actually had issues with our STL where it broke down and we had problems with that. So it's something we knew also that we needed a backup. So in this deal, as Robin was saying, there's a new transmitter, new backup transmitter, new STL, and new backup STL. And any one of those pieces is tens of thousands of dollars. I mean, the transmitter is more than tens of thousands of dollars, but even just an STL is tens of thousands of dollars.
Now, we've opened up our phone lines to listeners to call in with questions and comments. The number to call is 684-7561, and we do have somebody who's called in. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi, I have a couple questions for your guests there. First question is, now, is the relocation of your call number there, is that going to affect your satellite? Like right now, you guys are 845 on StarChoice and 508 on Shaw Direct. For those people that have satellite and use it, is that going to change? And also, your server and streaming capabilities sometimes are compromised. And I'm just wondering if some of that money is going to be funneled into improving your podcasts and your access to streaming, because it's quite a scenario sometimes to get to you on streaming. You've got PLS and ASX and all these different forms. Those are medias, I think, that if you're going to trim your radio frequencies, it'll be able to branch out far and wide, especially the internet.
Okay, so let's look at these two questions now. Leela, do you want to respond to the question about the satellite frequency?
Yeah, with regards to satellite and the TELUS TV, that shouldn't change at all. So that's just those providers that are choosing to pick up our signal. So we would just need to coordinate with them if that affects them in any way, but that would stay the same. So there should be no change in their choice to service people.
And on the website and streaming side of things, that is my area of expertise. I helped get the website up online and get the streaming working this past year. The streaming is always working. Get the online archives working based off the streaming and stuff. And as part of this, one of the things we want to do right away is get a stronger internet connection into the building. Right now, we're just running on basically what you have at home, a dial-up type, or not a dial-up, but a home type connection, nothing really beefy and strong. So occasionally our stream does go down because of it just gets overwhelmed, the connection here. And also our servers are also probably 5-7 years old here in the station, and we're working on getting those all upgraded. So once we have all that stuff in place and with a bit more funds, we can have a much more solid and reliable system. And hopefully, I mean, the streaming, it's either on or not. So it will be on more of the time, which will be good.
So does that answer your questions, caller?
It does, yeah. And I just had one other quick one. So I understand that you guys have to pay for space on the tower on the mountain. And so... Thank you. If I remember, I heard one of your board of directors was talking about the fact that you would only have a 5 years rental or something paid on this new spot on the tower. Now, is that going to, now, like you say, with the influx of all this radio demand on the bandwidth, is that going to cause you guys grief down the road? Like, would it be wise to negotiate maybe a 10 or 15 year rental space on that tower capacity? Or because that could cost you a lot of money in the long run.
Thanks very much for that question. And Leela's going to answer, and then I'm going to let you go and then let other people get on there. Thank you very much.
Yep, I don't mean to inundate your phone.
Oh, no problem.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. The number to call is 684-7561. If you would like to pose questions to Leela Cheney or Robin Pugo, or if you'd like to make a comment about our frequency swap. What about that question?
And great questions, because these are questions that have been coming up a lot, so I'm really glad that he asked that. So just to clarify, the transmitter itself, the device itself, we own. So the one we have now, we own. The one we will have, we will own. So it's not there's not going to be any extra cost on that other than pumping electricity through, which is an operational cost. The cost, though, that there would still be is for the rental of the space to put our transmitter on. So it's just the space that where the transmitter lies. We need to rent that. The land itself is Crown land. Nobody owns it. Well, the public owns it. And it gets leased out. There's 5 different companies that lease various parts of Mount Seymour for these purposes. So there's 5 choices we have in who we can go to lease space on Mount Seymour. So far, for the past 25 years, we've been leasing from, it used to be CKNW, and then it got bought out by Chorus. So more recently, it's been Chorus. And in the last several years, we had issues with them raising our rental rates quite high, and that made it untenable for us to stay there. So in fact, we were already in a place way before this deal came along where we were looking at, what are we going to do? We need to move the station, because this is not the transmitter site, because this is untenable. So where we will be located, the land that this new transmitter will be located, is on land that is leased by Terrasen. So Terrasen is the lease that we would sublease, I guess,
from the gas company.
The gas company, they have it there because they need it as an emergency broadcast system. So they're not really using it for commercial broadcast use. So that's different. That's a move. So for 5 years, the issue is we would have no rent. That would be covered. And I think that's a very wise comment that the caller made, in terms of that's something we want to do, is to begin negotiations now with Terrasen to see if we can have something that's sustainable in the future that would be 10, 15, 20, 50 years down the road. From all the information we've got, they're not in a position to really be wanting tons of cash out of this. That's not what that space is used for them. It's a different situation for them than it is for the commercial broadcasters. So we might be in a good situation to negotiate.
We have a couple of other callers waiting on the line. Hello, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, is that me?
Yeah.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I guess it would be nice to try and get these corporations to offer us some free space as a tax write-off. I imagine that all the advertising that were being offered by Patterson, it will be a bit of a tax write-off for him too. I don't know. But I'm just wishing that we could take some of it. It seems like an awful lot of money to do advertising when, in fact, as those of us who listen to the station, we will know, because, of course, we'll be talking about it, that the frequency has moved, and send out a few flyers to existing members, and that should just about do it in terms of advising people, you know, some information on the internet. And I would love to see some of all that money being used to upgrade the server and, as the other fellow said, give us more power on the internet.
So I guess the question then is, in terms of the way that the deal was written, could we have negotiated more money for another kind of something that we need more, the caller is suggesting, than advertising? How was it decided how that deal went together?
Well, the way it broke down as we, you know, went through a series of negotiations going back and forth, the advertising was brought up as a way of bridging that gap when we were changing stations. I'm assuming it's costing Patterson nothing to give us that amount for advertising. So, I mean, in our negotiations, this was not something that we really focused on. It was really the operating funds to be able to, you know, get back on a more solid financial footing. I'm also the treasurer, and it's bleak. There's a lot of months where we are right down to the wire, and this is one of those months. So sign up for a membership or renew your membership right now. But we operate on the razor's edge all the time. And so that was really our focus, was to get ourselves onto some firm financial footing, get our equipment into a much more stable state. And the advertising is really, you know, I guess, icing. It's not even icing. It's just another layer in that cake. It's going to be interesting to see, because I have not, you know, we just don't have a lot of exposure out there in Vancouver. I mean, people know about Co-op Radio because they've listened to it for decades, and there's not a lot of new people that you see coming through the door a lot. So I really would like to see new audiences engaged, people tune in to something that they, you know, might have heard about, but they don't really know a lot about, and this will give us just another way of getting the message out there.
Thank you for your question, caller.
Okay.
And I believe we have another call on the line here. The number to call is 684-7561. We just actually have two lines open. So if you hear somebody go, then that's your chance to go to your phone and call us. 684-7561. Hello there.
Oh, hello. One of my concerns with CFRO, or one of my troubles with listening to Co-op Radio, has always been the quality of the radio signal. I live in Southeast Vancouver on a hillside facing away from Mount Seymour, and so it's quite, some days I can't get the reception, some days I can. And the question is, how will the new frequency and the new equipment, will it provide better reception? If it's in a narrower band, is it possible there will be more risk of interference from adjacent radio stations?
Do we know, Leila?
Well, we know in that we have a the example out there right now. If you tune into 100.5, which we're not encouraging you to do right now, do it in the middle of the night maybe, but if you tune into 100.5, then that's exactly the signal you'll get. It's the same transmitter, it's the same... Same location of the transmitter. That's what... It's very rare that you get the opportunity to test out what you want in radio, and this is one of those opportunities where we got to test it out. So that's what you'll get. It's funny, I mean, I talked to our broadcast technician, and it's interesting because you can pump power as much as you want, but you know, living in South Van, it's tricky because around Mount, there's not anything you can do with barriers to FM signals. So there's not a whole lot, you know, it's a conundrum for radio technicians everywhere. But they try to pump more power to get through those concrete buildings. So for example, the problem people have in downtown Vancouver, where they're in a concrete building and they're having trouble hearing us, that will probably be a lot better.
Because we'll have a slightly bigger signal?
We'll have a slightly stronger signal from here. Slightly. It's going to be pretty much the same, but it'll be slightly, and it's a newer transmitter and stronger. It's also going to be stereo.
And we're, I think, 1,000 feet higher, the new transmitter, than our current one.
Thanks very much, caller. Did you have another comment?
Well, that sounds very good, and I like the point about the advertising as well.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. The number to call is 684-7561, and we invite you to call in, ask questions of our guests here, Leela Chinia and Robin Puga, about the frequency swap that we have negotiated with the Jim Patterson Group. Hello, caller. You're on next.
Hi. I guess I'm not so enamored with the idea of selling out to Jim Patterson, but, you know, that's really not that relevant. What seems to be most relevant is the capability of 100,000 watts to broadcast to all around the whole basin here. There's a basin between Seattle and, Campbell River and Victoria and all around the Vancouver area. There's somewhere between 8 and 10 million people in this airshed basin, which can be reached, I'm sure, by a powerful transmitter on Mount Seymour. Now, 8 to 10 million people will become, I'm sure, 20 million people in the next 20 years here, at least 20 million, if not 30 million people here. This is a huge number of people that could have access to really good radio, which Co-op Radio puts out. I mean, I've been involved with Co-op Radio on and off for 30-odd years, pretty well since the beginning, not quite, but I helped do a program, Red Eye. I believe that show still goes on Saturday. Part of it, in fact.
This is Red Eye.
Great, yeah. So I used to do part of the Red Eye program way back when. Several issues about South Moresby and fishing and environmental stewardship, different things like that at the time that were considerations, and I think still are. And Co-op Radio puts out some information that is unparalleled, absolutely unparalleled anywhere in British Columbia. There are a couple of other really small stations that have the wattage similar to what you were talking about earlier with that U.S. Group of small stations that have 100-watt licenses.
So I guess your question would be then, why are we not taking advantage of the capability that we have? Is that...
Well, I understand there's money involved, but I mean, when you get right down to the money, for Patterson, it's like one day's net profits. You know, it's absolutely nothing for them. And the advertising part of it as well. Co-op Radio could get a little bit more innovative in putting a few ads in buses or, you know, the back of seats of bus stops and so on. But, I mean, you could also put out some newspaper boxes out there, the ones that you find at the beginning of SkyTrain stations and the C-Bus and so on. That would get the message out if you put out a paper more often like you used to at one time, and usually... they have been really good informative papers, but
it's
minimized. So your advertising can be taken up other ways. The actual $1.something million, which is really what seems to be what's driving this. I mean, all it takes is one serious, long-time supporter listener to donate their house or their inheritance when they die. That's it. It's like one house in Vancouver is $1 million now, 1.2. So that's what we're talking about here, is having one good dedicated listener that knows that Co-op Radio hasn't sold out when they die to pass on their inheritance.
I'm just going to jump in.
Don't be impatient for the money. Do what's right for the station and the people of this province. You know, I mean, selling out the whole co-op approach to, it sounds like, to Terrison now, because then you'll be under U.S. law and Canadian law, right?
I'm just going to jump in here and put those thoughts, those comments to Leela Chunia and Robin Puga. What do you think?
Well, the first part of that call, it sounded like the concern was around us not making use of that 100,000 watts that's allocated to us right now. And so just to clarify, I think we were talking a little bit about this before, but to clarify, so right now for the past 35 years, we've been operating at around just over 3,000 watts. That's what we can afford to do. That's as much as we can do. So we wouldn't be able to ever, it's I think, unthinkable that we could ever operate at a hydro cost for that would pump out 100,000 watts 24 hours a day. So that's not something that's just within our capabilities. I think we've heard from other callers who were saying, you know, why not use your operational money to improve your streaming and your archives and all these other things? And those are the questions we face every day. We've got staff costs, we've got training, we've got, you know, technology costs, and we're at bare bones already. So that's, I don't think, someplace we would put that. The issue around selling out, I think it's a really interesting point to make, because I think as soon as people hear Pattison Broadcast Group, everybody tightens up. And I have to be honest with you, I think every single board member and staff member who is part of this negotiations tightened up at first. We're like, what? Dealing with Pattison Broadcast Group? Because we've all been aware of anti-corporate, you know, of the harms of corporations, of the fact that, you know, are they out to get us, or what are they going to, you know, try to, whatever. We were all very wary. And so I think that's important to know, that we all had those questions, you know, what's going on here? Are we going to be affected in any way? And I think when you use the word sell it, I think it's one thing to have a business transaction with a business. I mean, right now, for 25 years, we've been renting land from Chorus Entertainment. We've had no other choice but to do that, because we need to have a place to have our transmitter. So we've always, you know, as any kind of business, you're having to do some business with other businesses. But in terms of, okay, are we selling out? Is this impacting what goes on the air in any way? And the answer is no. This is a one-time only thing. We have something they want, and they're giving us something in exchange for that. And there is absolutely no, nothing to do with our programming. If that were the case, the board and staff would not back this deal. If that were the case, the CRTC would not back this deal. The CRTC would not support anything that undermines our ability to be a community radio station. And being a community radio station means providing alternative perspectives. So that will stay the same.
The number to call to put questions. Thank you, caller, for that. The number to call is 684-7561. And if you would like to call in and ask questions or make comments, then you are very welcome to do so. Hi there, caller.
Hello. Thanks, Leela and Robin and Jane, for hosting the conversation this morning. One question I have is why it was decided that 102.7 should swap with the Peak, which is 100.5, and not the other Jim Pattison radio station in Vancouver, JRFM, which is 93.7.
Do you guys know the answer to that?
Well, my understanding is that the 100.5 was the that smaller license that they really wanted, or I guess the Pattison Group had plans for greater things with whatever the type of music they play on 100.5. I'm really not even sure. but my understanding was that is what they were looking to improve. So that's the deal that they brought to the table. I'm not sure what their plans are for their other stations, but that was their plans with 100.5.
Okay.
I do know I listen to obviously co-op, but also the two other stations, the Peak and JRFM, which is a country music station, and I don't listen to country too much, but I do know that JRFM, if you were to look at the two stations that Pattison have got in Vancouver, JRFM, I think they're doing quite well. I mean, they've got like a strong listenership. Could it be that, you know, I mean, one of the advantages I think for the Peak is going to be, you know, if they can boost their signal, it's going to make a big difference for them. Their format, basically, I think they pretty much ripped off their format for the Peak. They ripped it off the radio station that's out of BCIT. you know, we took that format, you know, which was Evolution 107.9, basically just took that whole format of indie music and just started playing it on the Peak. Okay. Anyhow, that's another thing.
Thanks very much for calling in.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye now. The number to call to put questions to our two guests here is 684-7561. One of the things that I think has come up for people is why was this whole deal negotiated in secrecy? Why did we only find out about it when it was pretty much signed?
So when this began, we were required to sign a non-disclosure agreement. That's standard practice for any corporate station. Obviously they have their advantages for doing that. From our end, so this was part of the deal. This was part of, if you want to participate in these negotiations, you're going to need to sign a non-disclosure agreement. So that was the question before us. And I think for the board and staff, it was a question of, okay, well, on the one hand, we have these benefits to the station that are right before us that we have the opportunity to get. There's a pretty small, there's a very small number of opportunities, like other stations that might be in the position of Pattison, if at all. According to our broadcast technician who we consulted with, you know, there's very few stations getting new licenses that are in this position that Pattison's in. So the opportunity to shop around is not really there. So in terms of that. But the question before us was, okay, we need to sign this non-disclosure agreement in exchange, you know, to have this opportunity. And the benefits really outweighed that downfall of not being able to bring this to the membership. Because, you know, if we did bring this to the membership, that's it. There was no penalty in terms of money with this non-disclosure agreement. The penalty was the deal goes away. So I think we had a responsibility to the membership to kind of carry this through, to bring these benefits. And I think also in making that decision, there was the knowledge that there would be this opportunity right now, that this is going to be public, because that's just how it is. Once it goes to the CRTC, it's public, and that's the opportunity for people to know about. Now, unfortunately, that happened a month after our AGM, and so that's why we weren't able to announce it at our AGM, but we did decide to hold a special members information meeting, and we've had very short notice to get this together. But just so everybody who's listening is aware, today at noon, we're having a members information meeting at the station, which is at 360 Columbia Street. And it's these kind of questions that you guys are bringing up and any other concerns or questions you want to bring about, and just understanding the context behind this decision and why we felt that this was in the best interest of the station.
Yes, I guess I'm just wondering, when you say that there are very few opportunities, very few people who could take advantage of this, also, there's very few places that Pattison could go to get that extra bandwidth, which they can obviously make a lot of money off. So I'm just wondering if that was challenged at all, saying like, well, actually the kind of structure that we have, we're a cooperative, we're answerable to our members. How about if we sign an agreement and say we will not negotiate with anybody else? Was that approach taken at all for the negotiation?
We didn't. We were in that position of this is what you need to do to, you know, these are the terms of the negotiations. So I think that was the decision we made.
The number to call to join us here is 684-7561. Hello there, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to say I've been listening to this show the whole time about the talk about the station. And I just want to say, you know, somebody came to me about a week ago and said, what do you think about co-op being sold to Jim Pattison? And so I just want to say, having read the article in the Georgia Strait recently, having listened to this program for the last half hour, thank you very much for clearing that up. I'm a longstanding member. I was very anxious when I heard that. So I, for one, am for it now, having heard all the ins and outs and some of the details, and notwithstanding the secrecy it was done in, I am actually for the process, and I think it'll be good for co-op. Thank you very much for clarifying it.
Thank you for calling. I guess that is a concern, because I know that people have been saying all kinds of things about the deal, and it doesn't sound like we've been like so successful getting it out there in terms of what's actually happening. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we have quite a bit of information on our website now. As Leela said, it is unfortunate with the timing. We had really hoped that the CRTC would be putting it to the public gazetting before the AGM. That just didn't happen. So it was a month after the AGM, unfortunately, when that happened. And then with the holidays and everything like that, it's just been, yeah, it's just terrible timing. That being said, there is information on the website. There's a FAQ. You can also listen to Mark Lindy's Red Eye interview. We're going to be adding more information to the FAQ on the website about the non-disclosure agreement. I think that's definitely some information that's lacking from there. And yeah, today at noon, we're going to be holding that member information session and really are looking to answer any of the outstanding questions.
Just let me give the number one more time just to see if we have one more question out there, and then we'll have to close the phone lines. The number is 684-7561.
And I was just going to say that if anybody's not able to come today, or if you have questions you haven't been able to get through in the phone lines, give us an email at send us an email at CFRO-swap, S-W-A-P, at cooperadio.org. So that's CFRO-swap at cooperadio.org, and we can answer your questions if you've still got outstanding concerns or questions, because I think it's a very good point that we want to make this transparent. We want people to know what the information is, because we haven't been able to, and this is our opportunity to do that now.
In the history of the station, there has never been this kind of cash injection. And, of course, that presents opportunities, but as someone who sat on the board for a long time myself, I know it also presents significant challenges. How are we going to manage all that money coming in?
One way is that we're only getting paid monthly, so we don't get a large chunk that we can...
But in a sense, that's a disadvantage, because then you cannot put it aside for capital projects. I mean, in a sense,
at this
getting
point,
money monthly means that you might want to just... I mean, 5 years is not a long time.
Well, at this point, I think we've been focusing on a lot of other things. There's been the negotiation. There's been getting to this point, and it's still not a fait accompli, of course. So I think we're at the point where we're going to start really having some important meetings. And that's going to be, you know, opportunities for members to get involved and really have their input, share their input on how they think, what they think the priorities for the organization are, because those are some very big questions.
How will people find out about those meetings?
We'll let them know, I guess, through, emails, website, our regular, through our listeners guide. We haven't organized anything yet. Really, we're just kind of doing the best we can from day to day still.
And again, as treasurer, what I want to see is us get onto a firm financial footing, and that I'm hoping we can do within 6 months. We're not like, we're not in ruins or anything, but, we really need to get to a point in our finances where we can feel comfortable that we'll be able to pay all our bills every month.
We have another couple of callers, and then I think we're going to close our phone lines after that. So if you're holding, then continue to hold, but otherwise we are closing our phone lines after that. Hello there, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, yeah. Congratulations. I think this is good. I've been involved in cooperative for a long time and a member on and off, and I think this is great. I think you do need the money, and I was concerned when I read the article in the Georgia Strait, but I'm glad this is clearing it up. And I know you were, and what I wanted to say actually is, I know you were talking about this about 3 or 4, maybe 6 months ago. You were talking about having to have these changes, and you were going to be dealing with this. I think it was Jim Patterson. I'm not too sure what the fellow was talking about. I think it's the guy that does your transmitter work and stuff on a different program. But so that was out there, but people, I guess, just ignored it for all the things going on. But this is great, and good luck. That's all I want to say. Thanks.
Thank you
very much. And one more caller. Hi there. You're on the air.
Hi. As the previous caller said, if you don't do the swap, you might one day be able to reach a very large audience of maybe 20 million people. Unless you do that, your message in our society will be useless. And on the other hand, you give the opportunity to what could be considered as your enemy, the corporate tycoon, to do just that, to reach a larger audience. To me, that's very counterproductive, even though you may earn some money now. It goes counter your mission, it seems to me.
What about that, Leila?
Well, I was just going to say, again, right now, with the way that the frequency protection is, or lack thereof, if you don't use it, you lose it. So unless we were to boost up our signal to 100,000 watts tomorrow, which we can't afford to do, then it doesn't matter. It's either going to go to Patterson, or it's going to go to a Seattle station, or it's going to go to somebody else. So somebody is going to take that space. And once they've taken it, we have no protection on that. So really, it's literally, if we don't use it, we lose it, and there's no ability for us to use it. So it's going to be lost no matter what. It's just a matter of whether we get something out of losing it, or whether we lose it for free.
What about that? The fact that you will be exposed to the U.S. law on top of the Canadian law? You know, which could be very restrictive for you.
We missed the first part of the question.
And the previous caller said that if you engage in that swap, you will be then, you know, involved also with the U.S., the American law, rather than only with the Canadian broadcasting law. And that may be sort of restrictive, become fairly restrictive for your station.
That's not the case. This negotiation, this swap, has nothing to do with American law. This is completely through the CRTC. That's how the licensing of the frequency is occurring, and the rest is just a business deal. So there's no encroachment of American law in this arrangement at all.
It was a suggestion that American stations could use that extra frequency. I don't know if that's what you're referring to, Carla.
If that's the case, if American stations came in, I think then it becomes very complicated. And you're right, American law, you'd have to negotiate around American law to get that frequency back. And so again, it's that use or lose it. And if it's an American station that uses it and we try to get it back, then it becomes very complicated.
Thank you very much for calling in.
You're welcome.
And thank you to both of you for coming in and taking all these calls and comments. I've certainly learned a lot, and we will be making this available on our website too, so that if you listening have been able to hear it, but you would like to share it with somebody else, we will be making that available both through our podcast on Red Eye and through the Court Radio site. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. I've been speaking with Leila Chinia and Robin Puga. Leila Chinia is Co-op Radio Program Coordinator, and Robin Puga is on the Board of Directors.